You're listening to Around Comics, episode 116.
Boo-hoo!
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic book roundtable, where twice a week you'll hear a revolving panel of guests discuss comic books and graphic novels. On every Thursday episode, like this one, you'll hear either topic discussions, creator interviews, Comics 101, or creator spotlights. Today, among other topics, we're talking about the long relationship and shared influences of comics and music. Let's introduce today's panel. I'm Christopher Niesman, and next to me are Brian Salazar.
Hello.
Tom Caters.
Hello.
Scotty Young.
Hi.
And joining us on the guest line is the lead singer and founding member of the hard rock band Monster Magnet, Mr. Dave Windorf.
How's it going, everyone?
Very good. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. It's an honor to be here.
So you had nothing else to do on a Friday night?
No, actually, I got plenty. You know what I'm doing right now? I'm recording samples and sounds of human pain, just to put on in the background of a German movie.
Wow,
that'll be coming out for Halloween.
Yeah,
it's kind of a bummer, man. I mean, like, you know, I would spend all day sampling every kind of like horrible scream and everything, and you know, after about 4 hours of hearing, I need to talk about comics.
Well, you'll be screaming by the end of this one, so
put
don't worry.
Put the lotion in the basket.
Well, before we get too much farther here, I want to let everyone know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
And Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. All right, let's move on to our topic discussion. We're going to be talking about some of the influences of music and comics and vice versa. And Dave, being an industry professional and in music and a comics enthusiast, was kind enough to join us this evening. So I want to start off with some of Dave's thoughts on bands in comics and some of the relationships there. Maybe even, you know, with Monster Magnet, which it's been noted that there's a lot of comic references in your music. So if you can tell us a little bit of your background and why and how you were able to tie some comic influences into your band's work.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, to me it was always, yeah, I guess, you know, if you're doing it right, you're supposed to write about what you love and what you don't love too. And you know, so far as influences go, my first like big impactful influences besides movies were comic books, because comic books are, you know, they're a really personal thing when you're a kid. And obviously they're a personal, you know, it stays with you or we wouldn't all be here. There's nothing like comic books. It's just like the first, you know, chosen literature by a child. And that stuff stays with you forever, you know. Me and my comic books, when I was a kid, I didn't even share comic books with anybody else. I didn't know anybody who read them. So they really stuck with me. And later on, as I grew up, I never not thought about them. You know, it's like, the comics, they're my friend. It wasn't really about the fantastical nature, Scotty, fantastical.
Hey, it actually is a word.
Oh, yeah, it's a word. I looked it up.
Yeah, I did too. At first I was like, oh, you know what, the guy was totally right.
I probably did just make up a word. I posted, and then I went to the dictionary, and I was like, you know what?
That's a word.
Fuck Dave.
Put that
not
on
you, not you, Dave, the Dave that posted and said, was making fun of me for putting a word, and I said, you know what? It is a fucking word.
I was right to begin with.
That's not a realistic enough word, Dick. It's not a realistic word. I can't buy it. I'm not buying that book anymore. No, but anyway, you know, with comics and music and stuff, you know, those kind of things, they don't leave you. You know, they really don't leave you. It's very, very inspiring. And I just had no problem when writing a song. I write pretty much stream of consciousness, you know, and if MODOK wants to show up in a song, he shows up in a song.
I brought that quote up today on the way over here.
You know, and it's never about, you know, it's not about the characters or the stories. It's just about that image in your head. And what, you know, to me, comic books always, when I was a kid, represented, besides just, you know, my first, you know, thing that's all mine. As I grew up, I realized, you know, comics is the place where any concept can go at any time. You know, it's just push a button and boom, everything comes out. My heroes, which used to be Spider-Man and Captain America when I was a kid, are now the people that make that stuff. And they always inspire me. It's like, wow, you know, these guys just sit there and out of their heads, without too much interference from other people, come these insane concepts. Every month. Forever. You know? It's like long-lived comics, because it's pretty much the only medium that allows for that.
Oh, I used to have a boss at work who looked exactly how I imagined Reed Richards would look in real life. And every time there was a meeting, the entire time I sat there, I just kept thinking, my boss looks like Reed Richards.
That's awesome.
And I couldn't get over it, but no one else at work reads comics, so I could never be like, doesn't that guy look like Mr. Fantastic?
I know what you mean. And, you know, there's not that many people out. I mean, I know with fandom and stuff, and at least with me, it was, I never met any of those people. So I always felt I was privy to an outrageously cool, yet very, very secret world, which is really important to a kid, you know?
Do you find that the world of music and comics maybe go together for somebody like you, who later on had a band, started out as a comic fan, later on had, you know, a couple bands? Do you feel that it really kind of all stems from you just being a creative person, being, as far as whether it's music, drawing, whatever, you gravitated towards comics as a young person because it was a creative outlet? As you got older, obviously, your creative outlet became music. Do you think that has anything to do with, you know, you liking the comics as well? I mean, coming from a creative standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, here's two mediums where, if you're like a songwriter and a, like, say, a cartoonist or something, there's really not that many other people involved in the process.
Right.
So it's basically making something out of nothing, or what is the invitation to something out of it. You go into... The artist, the creator, goes into whatever is rattling around in their head.
Right.
Probably a combination of, like, bad, good, emotions, images and stuff. And you drag it all out and you just, you know, you just vomit it out all over the page or all over the cassette tape or digital whatever.
Right.
So I always felt, I didn't at first, I didn't make the connection at first, but later on, you know, as I read about, like, Jack Kirby's insane, you know, work ethic.
Right.
So Kirby always, like, impressed me because he was just a maniac, you know? He was just out of his mind. I was like, you know, that's the shit right there. This guy is just pouring everything out that he's got without much forethought to it.
Right.
He doesn't have time. And same thing with rock and roll. You know, if you're really, really in it, you don't have a lot of time to make Sergeant Pepper, you know what I mean? And
right.
He shouldn't have enough time.
I think
it's bad. It takes too much time. And that's why I really started going, you know, these are the guys who inspire me. As much as I can, you know, watch old DVDs of Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and the Ramones and stuff, it's like Kirby, you know?
Right.
Here's this guy, you know, this little troll guy that went down to his basement every day, and he came up, and when he came up, you know, he had the Black Panther and Wakanda and Galactus and the Silver Surfer. It's like, Jesus Christ, this guy's, like, doing it. And he's just going into his own head.
Right. Well, I think it's for me, it's the reverse of what you just said, where as a musician, you look to, like you were just mentioning, Kirby and that stuff, to really kind of put gas in your tank. And I know for me, I can't speak for all comic book artists, but for me, music plays a huge part in getting me started with that white piece of paper every morning. You know what I mean? Depending on what kind of scene is going to be drawn. And I know, I think a lot of other artists out there could say the same thing. You know, depending on what the tone of the sequences you're drawing or writing even, music plays a huge role in getting that spark started. And that's where I started to realize years ago, for me, music playing such a big part, that it really just all comes from that kid inside of that little creative core of your kid. And you just start kind of tying it all together in the end.
Yeah, you know, it's just stuff you don't really think about it at first. The most important stuff in the world is stuff you don't think about it. You just react to it. Music is like that, you know. It's on, you either like it or not, you know. It's like, oh, I like this. And then later you can put your, you know, studious, scrutinous eye on it and, like, ruin it.
Right,
you know, the first instinct of seeing it, like seeing a picture, seeing a painting, seeing a movie, seeing whatever, your first instinct is like, wow, you know. And that gets you going. The first 30 seconds of anything kills you, and you're off. And that's the way it was with images with me, and still, and, you know, I get psyched by comics every day. I get psyched by music every day. It's everything, you know. It's like, you know, art really is, you know, music and art, well, it's all the same, is mankind's best, you know, attribute, you know.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
what sets us apart from everybody, from everything else, you know. We actually make it happen out of our heads as opposed to just nature making it happen. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I tell you what, Dave, I just picked up the Jack Kirby Fourth World Omnibus and opened up to the first page, and there's a quote here, and it says, "And I was thinking how the world should have cried on the day that Jack Kirby died." And and that is attributed to Monster Magnet on a song called Melt. So first of all, what was it like to put that lyric into a hard rock song? And then second of all, how cool is it that you have your words in a Jack Kirby omnibus?
Well, it's way cooler that I have my words in the Jack Kirby omnibus than I put it in the song. You know, just from a purely selfish point, I'm like, yes! I'm walking around, you know, like, showing it to my family. They're like, what? You know, what are you talking about? Look, I've arrived! And they're like, well, aren't you more worried about, like, selling your record and, like, doing all this stuff? And I'm like, no.
No, doesn't matter.
This is it. I've arrived. I'm like, totally impressed by that. You know? It's so cool.
I was gonna ask you. You had mentioned sort of when you had said, once you start thinking about it, you sort of ruin it. And something that came to my mind immediately is the sort of influx of books the last couple years about comic books. Like, there was one I read about philosophy and comic books, and I was just wondering, like, your thoughts about, you know, sometimes music criticism kind of ruins music a little bit. And sometimes I think it's really interesting. I think there's value both in looking at things a little bit deeper. Where would you sort of draw that line? You know, when does overthinking it become, you know, detrimental?
I think it's like, it's, you know, overthinking it becomes detrimental when people use that as ammunition to get their point across. You know what I mean? It's like, I understand everything, therefore I'm going to prove you wrong. I mean, I love music journalism and I love comics journalism. You just got to think through the other side. You know, it's like, okay, we've understood all this. We understand what makes it happen. We understand what, you know, what this could possibly mean, what it represents, blah, blah, blah. Comics are important and stuff. But you always have to go through the other side and realize, well, remember why you liked it in the first place.
Yeah.
Remember why you liked it in the first place, and always be ready to say, well, you know, that's just a bunch of eggheads' opinions anyway.
Yeah.
I like the eggheads' opinions. I mean, I really love comics and I really love music and stuff, but you got to always remember, you know, that initial spark that what got you into it. You know, if people think that way, then I just think it's great. It's when people stop, when they learn all the facts and they just use them as ammunition, blah, 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 blah. And then I just think people just want to fight at that point. You know?
Well, I also think sometimes I see people, they think about stuff so hard that they talk themselves out of liking things, which seems sort of backwards. You know, like, if you read something or you listen to something and you like it, and then you go back and you start nitpicking, And then all of a sudden at the end, like I've done it myself where I've read a book and I'm like, oh, I like that. But then something happened where I picked out something and all of a sudden that original feeling, because I'm trying to think about it too much, I lose it. And I'm like, well, that sucks. I just ruined that book for myself.
Sal talks me out of liking books all the time.
I think people do it every day. You know, it's like, it's a very elusive thing, man, to hold on to the things that you loved. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest problems with comics growing up and getting older is that, you know, not comics growing up, but, you know, superheroes growing up, is that there's so many people out there that want to, like you guys were talking about the show the other day, realism in comics. There's so many people that want to legitimize the fact that they read comics that they literally try to hammer and nail it and crowbar all the fun out of them, you know. God damn it, this is real, you know. And I don't have any problem with realism, whatever that is in comics, but when you can see the sweat, when you can actually feel them trying too hard, that's not cool. It's like, you know, you're supposed to take me away in this story. You're not supposed to, like, lay out your purpose in front of me. It gets me down, you know. It's interesting to watch, but, you know, there's some writers that can really, really do it, man. They're very aware of what they're doing. They're very aware of you know, the criticism that's going to take, but they don't care, and they just keep throwing you curveballs, you know, which is the way it should be.
Well, I always thought there was a... I remember the first time I read, like, the Byrne stuff, and when Byrne tried to sort of, like, the Superman stuff, where he tried to, like, give Superman's powers all, like, sort of a scientific basis, and it was kind of cool, but then it got kind of overboard, where then after a while you're like, well, I mean, I don't need to know why Superman flies. I'm okay with it. He can fly. I bought the book. I'm okay with Superman, you know, flying. And sometimes that stuff sort of, like, gets to me a little bit when people, they're just a little too much.
I hate when they do that because it just invites me to use my brain to work against them. It's like, all right, well, you started this shit. You know, you tried to explain it scientifically. Well, now I'm going to finish it. And you know something? I'm going to be right. I'm going to, like, bum myself out because you started me down this path of investigating why it's real or not. And instead of the writer trying to, like, dazzle me with their own pseudo-logic that I could never figure out, they actually give me a roadmap to find out where they're wrong. I don't want them to do that, you know? It's like, you know, you had me. You had me at page one. Why would you give me that kind of inroad to find out what's wrong with you?
Well, that just reminded me of do you read Fantastic Four?
I haven't read the new ones, no.
Okay. They're really good. The McDuffie stuff's really good, but there's a lot of internet debate about a scene involving Black Panther putting Silver Surfer in an arm lock, and people sort of arguing about whether or not that was possible. And it sort of struck me, like, the fact that in comic books, that sometimes people place, and it happens in, like, every genre, where people place the parts before the story. It's more important that all the parts make sense more than it makes for, like, a dramatic end. You know, I saw people arguing about, you know, in 52 they changed Black Adam's, you know, name, the word he would say to get his powers, and people were like, well, if they really wanted him to not get his powers, they would change it to a 56-word letter. And I'm like, well, that's going to be a shitty ending to his story. You know, you got to remember, they're still telling stories. So, yeah, that's how it...
Yeah, you know, check, please. You know, I mean, that's the kind of guy in the comic book store, I say, okay, you know, I just turn around and, like, look at another book. I'm like, okay, I used to work in a comic store, and I managed a comic store for, like, 5 years, and I used to get that, and I was just like, ooh, you know, like a coyote. I wanted to eat my own arm off, you know, to get out of the conversation, because I'm never going to have any fun in conversation with people like that. I think that started, you know, that all started with Stan Lee, you know, in this brilliant, probably brilliant and not very planned move of bringing so-called realism into comics, you know. He had a run there in Marvel from about 61 to about 67 or 68. It was really brief, where he moved in real time. It was a novelty back then. You know, he moved in real time. People graduated from high school and went into college. They got married. They had babies. Nobody ever did that comics before. And the whole world of comic book lovers, which was growing because of the 60s, you know, enthusiasm for pop art, really latched onto it and said, wow, look, they're doing something different with comic books. It's not just Dondi, you know, like fighting, you know, a bad guy every week and then escaping or whatever. And people held on to that like grim death. You know what I mean? Like grim death. And then they started picking out. Stan Lee gave the no prize to people who figured out what was wrong. But it was all very funny. But then it got not funny anymore. You know, and then the fans, you know, probably at this point, stoned out and on acid, were looking for hidden meanings in everything and looking for explanations in everything. And meanwhile, the guys up there at, you know, Madison Avenue doing the comics were like, ah, fuck it, we don't care. And that's when the tail started to wag the dog a little bit. And the people that came into Marvel and DC after that in the 70s, in that crazy Bronze Age stuff where anything goes, you could tell those guys were really, really trying hard to carry on that legacy of continuity. And it was just a disaster. It was a huge disaster. It took 35, 40 years for people like Jeff Johns to get a handle on that stuff. You know, the guys that come out now, like Johns and some other people, they really know. They know how to dodge the bullet, you know, that crazy bullet.
Well, I think that a lot of those guys that came in the Bronze Age were also sort of the first generation of your, like, hardcore fan that
yep.
became, you know, a writer. That wasn't their, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you started getting a lot more guys, that wasn't their second choice. You know, it wasn't like they ended up in comics.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, right,
that was,
yeah.
Right. That was what they wanted to do. So you show up, and all of a sudden you have all these ideas in your own head about, like, how you want to do things. And no one's there to, you know, stop you.
Yeah, oh, no, definitely, man. I mean, they were the first generation. That, you know, that was the first time kids were back in comics since the 1940s. You know, it's interesting to note, like, when the comic book was first sold, like in 1938, I think, was the first actual original comic books that we know them as today, it was all kids. Because they couldn't be like the strip guys, like Hal Foster and all those guys. Those guys were making $1 million and they were in the papers and they were legitimate. You know, they couldn't be those guys. And they were kids that were taken advantage of by basically pulp publishers who got them in sweatshops and said, do it, you know, make up anything you want. You know, it's selling. And for the next, I don't know how many years, but all the way up to the 70s, there were no kids in comics. They were all guys that fought in World War II. You know,
and then obviously you get Jim Shooter.
The whole Silver Age, the most psychedelic and probably one of the most potent creative times in comics. Given all its restrictions, still one of the most potent and magical times, was all created by guys in their 50s. Isn't that insane?
Well, also,
Jack Kirby was 55 when he was doing, Galactus and stuff. So when the kids came back, finally, they let them back in, you know, in the 70s, they were just totally bursting with all these, like, crazy ideas and stuff, but they were totally psyched up by Stan Lee and the whole continuity thing, the, you know, so-called realism comics, and they just went into it whole hog, and some of it was great, some of it was absolutely awful. I think the reason Marvel had so many editors at that time is they just couldn't deal with the fact that comics really, you know, in order to make comics real, you have to be really, really aware that they're unreal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like smoke and mirrors, you know? Let's pretend it's the imitation of change, but not real change.
Well, an interesting thing about, you know, mentioning the fact that all the guys that were doing those sort of crazy psychedelic things were in their 50s, you know, sort of
yeah.
like tying it to music. Sometimes when you see like something really interesting come out in music or in any sort of art form, I feel like sometimes it's because the people that are making it actually don't know what the people buying it really want, so
hell
they
yeah.
they don't know how to cater it to them,
oh,
so
absolutely.
They come up with something weirder that you know that seems out of touch, but it actually it sort of like misses one way or another, and sometimes it works really well, and sometimes it works really badly.
Oh, but it's always interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? It's like, that's why right now, today, in the last 15 years since the like massive corporatization of radio and rock music, why there isn't that much interesting things? Because everybody knows, you know, how to get to the top of the mountain. You know, you get yourself an entertainment lawyer, blah, 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 blah. It's all kind of like sketched out. in the late 60s and in the 50s too. I mean, it goes through all different ages. There was times where the corporations knew that music was selling, but they didn't know why. So they just went out and signed everybody and said, I don't know what you kids are doing, but you know, just start making music and put it out. And they put it out, like, pretty much unedited, unfucked with, you know, these large swaths of decades of music, of just bands going berserk.
This is Gene Colan, and you are listening to Around Comics.
I had a conversation with my neighbors the other day about music, and we tied it to comic books as well, and I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on this, but just like what you guys were just talking about with catering to people and not knowing how to make things, Sal and I have talked I think everybody's had the conversation about where younger generations are finding their comic books. I feel that tying back into what you were saying about the corporations taking over everything on the music side as well, we were bringing up how younger generations of kids nowadays are, I'm trying to figure out how they're getting exposed to music on a natural level, where, you know, generations and generations before us, including us, had, you know, a million radio stations. You know, we did have the MTVs, the
friends, older brothers and sisters.
Right.
But, you know, now with the fact that I'm of the generation where I came around right when MTV started out as a true music station. Uh-huh. Obviously, we all know what it's become, but it seems little by little, all the places that people at a young age find the music that they're going to grow to love, or at least their gateway music that they're going to then find other things, are being taken away. If you turn on the radio, even in Chicago, as big a city as we have, I mean, I've really
never heard the radio here is horrible.
I mean,
it's awful.
Literally, you know, 5-6 songs on a complete rotation all day long, and we only have 2 or 3 stations that are anything to do with music.
It's just like, you gotta be kidding me.
Obviously, the TV music stations are gone, but I feel that that's another, nothing to do with each other, but also I feel like both realms of creativity are in that same block, where we're at a place in comics where we've been creating comics from inside a bubble and selling them within inside of our own bubble for so long that I'm wondering how younger generations are being exposed to comics the same way. Without radio, without music on your television, without all that, how are kids being exposed to music?
Two words for you: the internet. On both accounts.
But even that, even that still is, like I was saying before, I made sure I said, like, in an organic way, mm-hmm. where that's still searching things out. If you don't know to search something out, you know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff out there. Let's say Monster Magnet, for example.
Well, here, I'll tell you. Just from my own experience as a parent,
right?
My daughter is 4 now, and mm-hmm. she's starting to get into music.
Does she love Clutch?
No, she doesn't love Clutch. Yeah. She listens to,
I like Clutch.
Oh, I got their new album. It's so good.
Yeah, I know. I know them, guys. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she listens to the most, you know, pop stuff that's on, you know, that is on the radio, what's on the radio or what's on television, what's, you know, I mean, what she's most exposed to.
Right.
And it's, you know, whether it's, you know, this month it's Shakira or, right. you know, or whatever it may be. But I think it does, you know, it's like she's not, that's all her entire experience with music.
Right.
You know, and it's like me, you know, growing up, I was exposed to, like, hard rock, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like, from my older sisters and their boyfriends and their friends, you know, stuff like Zeppelin and Sabbath and, you know, that genre, you know, that which was way, you know, beyond my age group. I mean,
right.
it was older than, but that's what I got exposed to early, and then I grew from that into, you know, more punk stuff, and then from punk and, you know, but it was a natural
You're always going to have friends and siblings that expose you to their music that they love. But I feel that there's a smaller window of self-choosing
because
places.
The other side of it, where it's pushed on them,
when I was,
is so much bigger now.
When I was a kid,
and it's the same stuff.
Take a boombox or whatever you want to call it, and I used to have a stack of blank tapes, and I would just put a tape in at the beginning of the day and just record the radio
right.
all day, every day, for months. And I would, at the end, then I would go and take that and scan through it. And I would be, no, I'm not saying it's all good music.
I did that too.
But that's how I found, like, what's this?
Right,
what
and
this?
Then you would go and search it out. And
yeah,
then
and then as I got older, I would do the same thing in different ways. But then all of a sudden I bought a car and I was able to travel for 100 miles and go, have you heard, I'd play him a clip on a cassette tape, like, I don't know who this band is, could you, you know.
Well, I think almost, you know, sort of a side of that, or, you know, a part of that also is the creativity. And, like, Dave, what you were saying about how, you know, it's like musicians today, or, you know, whatever, entertainers, they know how to make you know, millions of dollars. They know how to.
They know how to try to make it.
Right. Well, they know how it's.
You know, it's like, I mean, if they really knew how to do it, then you'd see cool shit pushed through the system. But they think they know how to do it, which is even worse.
Well, they know the formula. They know.
They think
exactly.
They
know. You know
think
what I mean?
There is a formula.
Well, but there is kind of a formula because it is like corporate. It's, you know, it's corporate. Mandated, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like this
always,
is,
you know, the formula isn't always the music. The formula, you know, in the age of the art of the deal, the formula is in how, you know, how to make your connections and all that stuff. You know,
right.
That never used to be a big, you know, a big deal amongst band members. They never used to do that. Now you got a lot of band members and who are spending more time on selling their shit than they are on making it.
Right.
And that's why you see a lot of really, really successful rock bands, and you go, why? You're like, I don't get this. You're like, I can't believe this would have such universal appeal. And it's like, because they peeled it. They dealt it, you know? And so there's all kinds of other stuff going on besides the creativity.
Well, that,
creativity in the artistic.
That goes on in comics as well. I mean, you'll see editors and people online talking about a project for 8-9 months in a row, and then when it's time to actually sit down to create that piece of art, you know, it takes 30 days, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that brings up a really good point that I wanted to talk about, because I remember reading an interview about a musician, a band, I don't remember who it was or whatever, but, you know, they had put out, like, their first album, and it was really successful, and critically acclaimed and everything, and then, you know, like, 9 months later, they put out their second one, and you see it a lot. You know,
nine
like this,
months.
Well, you know
that's
what I mean.
Insane.
Well, that's the thing, and it's like, but think, you know, and what? Well, what the guy said was, you know,
DMX.
it's like, well, you know, my first album, I was thinking about that for
years.
10 years, yeah. And that's what I had in my head for 10 years before I finally got it out, you know, and made an album.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, I got to do the same thing in 9 months or whatever it may take. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
And like,
I went through that. It was like, holy shit! I was like, oh my god, you know. Yeah, it happens all the time. I guess that's what separates the men from the boys, as they used to say, you know.
but it's really interesting how
what happens to bands, you know, and comic guys and all creators, like, you know, when they step up to that plate, sometimes really, really cool stuff happens, and then sometimes you fold.
Well, Dave, I was gonna ask, kind of bringing things back to comics, and we had actually talked about this a few days ago.
I hate my freedom.
You see different bands out there, whether it's, you know, Kiss or, you know, Dee Snider has a comic project, and Gerard Way is working on a comic, which is actually very good. Have you ever thought about, you know, kind of taking your two passions of music and comics and trying to bridge that? Do you have any interest in working on a comic project? Because you're a very creative person that's obviously very enthusiastic about comics.
Oh, gee. I think, to me, I don't like people. I mean, I never appreciated when someone would try to use their celebrity to like kind of like bum rush another medium.
Yes.
I always thought that was really uncool, so I'd really be too embarrassed to do that, you know. Just say, hey, look, because I'm in a rock band and I'm creative means I can do comics also.
Well, that's our industry opens the door too fast for any, you know, anybody that has any kind of balls in another industry. They're like, come on in.
Same thing.
We need a couple dollars.
Like, you know, boy, comics, boy, sure is the most insecure industry in the world. Like, we like movies, you know, if the movies are doing good, okay, we'll draw the comics like the movies.
Yeah.
And we'll even put movie stars as the characters, you know.
Right.
That's a whole other thing, you know.
Same thing in accounting.
Hi, I'm Ed Brubaker. When I'm not waiting for the trade, I like to listen to a Round Comics podcast.
Well, Dave, I tell you what, what's because I know that you love getting the comics every week. You're hooked now. You're back in the game. So, what have you been reading lately that you're really enjoying?
I read so many comics now. It's like insane. And you know why? You know why I read so many comics now? Around Comics. That's why.
Oh, you suck up.
I found your show, right? And you know, I don't even watch TV hardly. You know, I just read like novels, and I just make music and stuff. And I listened to you guys, and I was like, "Holy shit, I'm back!" You know, these guys are dragging me back in. And since then, I've just been pretty much following what you guys talk about.
Did you read Black Sad?
Yeah, I know Black Sad. You know, I know the European stuff.
Oh,
and,
damn! That's my man over there.
My whole life, you know. So, what I've been reading lately. My heart stays with superheroes for some reason. Maybe I don't know why. I liked it. I like the execution of the books. I like the whole. I like the way the industry handles things, good or bad. So I'll follow the line. You know, like I followed the line, like DC's line of comics and Marvel's line of comics in the last couple of years. Of the last couple of years, all of which I read in the last 6 months, by the way. You know, it's like in stock trades, like, you know, is now empty because of me.
Have you had the problem
I'm
yet?
Following all that stuff, and I just love to look at everybody's stuff, and I love to see where it clicks in. Now, obviously, I have my favorites. You know, there's you know almost all of Alan Moore's stuff. You really can't go wrong with. You know, the masters, you know, and I could go on forever. But lately I've been digging DC, a lot of DC stuff, just because it's so out there, and it's funny, and it's over the top, and it's funny at the same time. I can't ignore the Marvel stuff because...
That's right, baby.
It's immediate, you know. It demands attention. It's like from anybody who's read comic books, I got to see what happens. It may not, like, give me a good feeling, you know, it's like the Marvel, the bummer age of comics.
Or the Michael Bay of comics, baby.
Really? The bummer age of Marvel.
But there's a lot of cool Marvel stuff sort of under that bummer, like all the Jeff Parker stuff he's been doing with, like, Agents of Atlas.
Hey, man, it's all the stuff that doesn't, like, play into their normal stuff is the best. Like Ant-Man, Heroes for Hire, Agents of Atlas... all the stuff that no one seems to be paying that much attention to or happens like separately, awesome.
It's like
absolutely awesome.
All the Jeff Parker stuff just seems to like fly. X-Men First Class has been really good because it totally avoids all the like bad stuff of that X-Men's built up over like 40 years.
Right.
So, I mean, it avoids all that, and it's really funny. Like, the last issue was great. I was blown away.
Yeah, I love when, you know, the best is when these guys, when a really good writer, and like, you know, when asked about what I read, I can never remember. I can never remember because I'm like, oh, I better answer this right.
You're like, I have to pick the right one.
When the stuff takes a left turn when it should have made a right turn is when I really, really like it, you know? I'm like, you know, like, what's going on here? This is insane. Like, you know, where's the editor? You know, and the editor's like smoking a joint in the bathroom or
whatever.
Something.
I'll tell you where they're really fucking
cool.
At.
There's so much good stuff coming out now.
It
demands a lot of attention. If you've ever been into comics, boy, the last, like, I was talking to Chris about this the other day, because I was like, when did it get good again? You know, when did this happen? I never stopped buying comics, but I stopped buying new comics because I couldn't understand what was going on. And he was like, well, you know, it's, you know, out of the ashes of, you know, the later Image years, with like Authority, Planetary and stuff like that, when on all these, like, basically children of Miller and children of Moore, you know, the people that were inspired by Alan Moore and Frank Miller, almost exclusively in the superhero genre, those guys have like literally brought this really, really cool vibe, you know, to superhero books. Just when you thought you couldn't do anything else with a superhero book, they pull it out. It's cool. So that, I mean, I follow that stuff. And independents, I'm always up for, you know. I'm always reading independents. There's not that much difference between independents and majors anymore. Everybody's, you know, everyone's got their hand in something.
So would you consider yourself, obviously from a story standpoint, do you, Do you consider yourself more of a writer guy or an artist guy?
Tread very carefully here.
Yeah, Dave. I don't give a fuck how many people you played songs in front of.
I've always been an artist guy. You know why?
Yeah.
Up until Alan Moore, I was always an artist guy because right. I think up until Alan Moore, I don't think anyone really thought about that strongly about tailoring their words to the art.
Right.
And what it comes down to this, if they were to fire every writer in comics tomorrow, there would be comics next week.
Yeah.
If they were to fire every artist in comics tomorrow, there'd be no comics next week.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, you're exactly right.
It's like, hey, a really, really good artist, the way they were trained, the way that Stan Lee trained them, which, you know, like it or not, he trained those guys to tell a story. He took guys that didn't know how to tell a story and made them tell a story.
They had to.
If an artist is good enough, which most of them I believe are, he can lay out something that, I don't want to say a two-year-old, you know, not a monkey. No, that's somebody with the right spirit to go in and dialogue over. And to you and I and probably most other people would say, hey, that's a pretty decent comic.
I've done it many times, my friend.
You know, now, I don't want to put writers down because, you know, obviously writers are paid a lot to come up with cool ideas.
And a lot of them do.
But, I think writers are more in charge of direction. You know, I mean, they're in charge of direction, of planning out what's going to happen over the course of all this time. Obviously my favorite kind of comics are usually done by writer artists. You know,
the all in one package.
Themselves because obviously their vision, it's a lot purer vision.
Right.
But I was always driven by art.
Well, I tell you, we did an episode, this has been out last year sometime, and we called it Writer, Artist, Character, and we all kind of picked a writer and an artist and a character that we follow or that we will, just put it in the bank and we're going
to
get it. So I tell you, pick a writer, pick an artist, and pick a character that really no matter what it is, you're going to go out and get it.
Oh, Alan Moore. As a writer, I always follow what he writes. By artists, there's too many.
Don't say it, Scott.
Character.
Scotty Young.
No, that's a bad move, buddy.
Nick Fury, as a character, I'll always follow Nick Fury. I think Nick Fury is a great idea. You know, it's a great idea. It's a really 20th century idea that's turned into a 21st century idea.
Are you a bit frustrated now?
Keep on going, you know. And artists, there's just too many to count, man.
Who's the one you're most excited about when they're on a project?
I like Frank Quitely right now.
Ooh,
which,
come on.
By the way, is pronounced Quitely, you guys. It's not Quietly, it's Quitely.
Well, that's not his
Quitely.
Real name anyway.
Now, Dave.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Didn't we just have a big, long discussion about how much we love Darwin Cook?
Darwin Cook is awesome. I mean, he's just absolutely awesome. He's the ultimate, consummate cartoonist. He breaks everything down to what's most important with the least amount of lines. Economy of line is probably one of the most impressive things in cartooning. And when I say cartooning, I mean comic books and all that kind of stuff, because that's all it is. If a guy could pull off the amount of motion that Darwin Cook does with as little lines as he does, I mean, you know, he's a genius, you know, and it's like, Jesus Christ, look what he's doing, you know. It's amazing how these people could do that. And some of, you know, there has been people that have had advanced the shorthand so much so. Jack Kirby was one of those guys. Yeah, because comic books was born as a shorthand medium. That's a lot of the reasons why I enjoyed it in the first place. You knew these guys were on a deadline. You know, they had to invent shorthand. How can you get this across in the fastest amount of time?
I'm glad that glad that you brought up the calling it cartooning, because a thing that I've been battling in my 6 years of drawing for Marvel is the criticism of he's too cartoony, and I think it to be funny because in the history of comic books it was always called cartooning. You know, you are a cartoonist.
You're too cartoony for cartooning.
But we're actually at a point now where I'm, which, you know, and that's when I say, well, cartoony is not a motherfucking word. That is not in the dictionary. But
it's in my lexicon.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I'm very glad that you brought up the cartoonist because that's what I've always thought of it as. As a cartoonist.
If you ask John Byrne what he considered considers his career, he'll say, "I'm a cartoonist."
Yes.
And
yeah.
You know, it's you know,
that's
Andy.
Not a dirty word.
No,
no,
God, no.
Not at all, you know?
No,
no.
Cartoonist is not a dirty word.
No.
And plus, you know, when people say, and I hate that, I mean, it's like people throw out blanket statements like it's too cartoony.
Right.
Well, guess what? What cartoon are you talking about?
Right, right.
You know, are you talking about a Tex Avery cartoon? Are you talking about Underdog? Or, you know, like what?
Right.
You know, you're talking about anime.
But yeah, no, I just wanted to put out that that props for calling it cartooning. That's all.
Oh yeah, well, you know, it's like with like anything. People tend to I don't know, they want more legitimacy out of what they're reading and
yes.
You know what they're standing up for, and it's like, you know, dude, you don't have to really.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to really side with anyone. I mean, the best thing about comics is anything goes.
Exactly.
That's how we started this conversation. Anything goes, man. If you want to be a Norman Rockwell, go ahead and do it. I'm into it. I mean, this stuff has to come out every month anyway, and you've got a million titles. Hey, you know, just pull out of those stops. I don't care what it is. If it works, it works. It's fucking
right.
Awesome. You could have a Darwin Cook next to a John Cassaday. You know, I mean, it's awesome. You know, it's when it works. You know, it's funny. You know, when it works, nobody really complains.
No.
It's when it doesn't work that they really complain.
And people will complain endlessly when it works or doesn't work.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other episode, man.
Yeah, yeah. you're dead ass right there.
Comic book people complain more than anybody else, and I have a theory on that.
Do
they complain more than the music fans?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a theory on the why comic book fans complain. It's because the monthly nature of comic books and what used to be the letter section, which is now the internet, they actually, because it comes out every month and they know it's a work in progress, they always think in the back of their minds they can actually make a difference.
Yeah.
They scream long and loud enough, somebody will actually listen to them and change the story.
Do you know how many emails I get?
That's what it is.
I get so many emails every month on that exact same thing with people literally an email saying that I need to change this appearance or the height or the style of
add
haircut.
A skateboard.
Yeah, like literally, and they are not joking. It's not just
no,
a,
they're not joking, man.
They're not going, "Oh, you really draw cool. I'd love to see it." They literally are making a plea. Can you please bring this back? I used to love it. I want you to do it. Or I want this or that. And I'm always like,
it's kind of cute in its own mutant way.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like, oh, they really like the character, so I get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I never felt that way. I was, like, totally, like, impressed. I was like, you know, whatever these guys want to throw at me, I mean, I'm ready. You know, I'm a willing recipient of their mastery of the form. And if I didn't like it, I told them in the best way possible. I just didn't buy it.
Yep.
You know, I never complained about it. I mean, you know, I've talked to people about what I didn't like about it or whatever, whether it be a movie or nothing. But I would never, ever in a million years think of, like, writing a letter to the editor. This sucks. This is what you should do.
Well, yeah.
I was just more interested in finding stuff that I liked than finding stuff that I didn't like.
Yeah, sure. That being said, here's what Monster Magnet should do.
Hey, speaking of Monster Magnet, what's going on with the band? What's I heard you may have some.
I just finished the new Monster Magnet record. It's called Four Way Diablo, and that's going to come out sometime around October, I believe. I'm doing a soundtrack for a German it's like a retro German expressionist movie. It's real oddy, you know. I like the odd. And I do a lot of work in Europe. Weird stuff like TV commercials, movies. It's cool over there. Europe's really, really cool. I did some stuff for Hollywood. I worked for Warner Brothers for a while. I did some some incidental music for some crappy movies.
I love Varsity Blues. What are you talking about?
Are you making fun of fucking Varsity
no,
Blues?
No, I love that movie.
If you make fun of that, we're fighting.
No.
I don't want your lie.
The thing I did was even worse. It was a movie called Torque.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
was
nice.
Terrible.
Yeah, that was
that
bad.
Movie is fucking terrible.
Unbelievably horrible.
Oh, and, Jesus Christ.
I was like, hey, man, I just want to get the experience, you know? So, I worked on it and did a bunch of music, and it was cool.
Weren't you actually in a couple of movies as yourself?
I don't know. I mean, they put Monster Magnet in a couple of movies, so my face has been seen in a couple of movies.
Okay.
Yeah, here and there.
Well, you got to you do have to tell the story real quick before we let you go. You've been in an issue of Daredevil, right?
Spider-Man.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was Spider-Man. Okay.
Yeah, fuck
yeah,
you, Chris.
I mean, this was like, you know, the Grant Morrison thing in the Fourth World thing is like awesome, but it's the second time I ever like made it to the pinnacle of a comic mutant fandom. You know, when I was in a band called Shrapnel a million years ago in New York. We met Denny O'Neill, and me being a big comic freak, started talking Denny O'Neill's ass off about this. And he's like, you know, I'm going to bring down this guy that does Daredevil. And his name is Frank Miller. And I was like, yeah, I know who that is, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he came down, and he was doing, this is when Frank Miller was doing Daredevil, and he was going to do a Spectacular Spider-Man annual. So he comes out of CBGB's and we're playing. I'm talking to him, and the next thing you know, him and Danny O'Neill said, "How would you like to be in Spider-Man?" And I was like, "Fuck, this is awesome!" And goddamn, if they didn't do it, man, we got like two pages out of that.
Wow!
And I would just absolutely freak out. And the thing I remember about it the most, and this is the most horrible thing, is when I sat down with Frank Miller before he was like, you know, totally huge, and just blathered on to him drunkenly how much I like Gene Colan better than him. I was like, you know, I mean, this is before I had any kind of like, any kind of manners. I'm drunk, I'm a punk, you know, a punk rocker, and I'm sitting there like, dude, man, you know, drunk, you know, you're good and stuff, but it's real scratchy. Kind of scratchy, like Colan was so fucking cool. I mean, can't you do another book besides Daredevil? And he was just really, really nice guy about it. Ass.
Yeah, until he walked away from you, fucker.
You fuck, the last time I put you in a fucking comic book.
Well, Dave, I tell you what, this was this episode was really kind of an excuse to get people introduced to you because we love talking comics with you, and I'm sure this will just be the first of many times that you're on the show to talk comics with us.
And we should mention that we've been talking with Dave for a while now, completely sort of out of the blue that he, you know, he actually emailed me with some criticism for the show.
Bitch. Yeah.
He would never send a letter to the editor, but
right.
Us, yeah.
Yeah.
But he also happens to be a fan of our show and a listener of our show, and so we started talking, and then we found out that he was the lead singer of Monster Magnet and also a huge comic book fan, so that's sort of how it all evolved.
I got a letter from Jesus with criticisms.
Wait, you're not living up to your life? Is
that yeah.
You're fucking it all up, tax man.
Jesus said, "I soon swear so much, so kids can listen to the show."
I'm sorry about the criticism of the show. I couldn't help myself. You know, I never get like this.
No,
you shouldn't.
Yeah,
be sorry.
No, never.
It was like that band. You guys reminded me of a rock band. it's got all these different personalities, and you're doing this thing. And I was just like, I can't keep my mouth shut. I that never happened before. I never wrote a letter. That was the first letter I ever wrote to anything.
Well,
I think that's because I just love the show so much.
Well, you know, Tom's girlfriend is sitting in the corner right now.
Yeah, my Asian girlfriend, Yoko.
Yes. Tom's girlfriend is here right now. So
it's all over, man.
I record in a separate room from the rest of them.
Exactly.
Well, it's made of platinum and diamonds. It's safe room.
The trick is to get any kind of commitment out of Tom. You have to have her in the room at the same time, so he doesn't like start trying to like play both sides against the middle.
Well, I for one am glad that you did email us and that we got to know you and talk with you. So
I was when he called me and told me, I did have a little bit of a freak out moment because like you said about comics before music, I was the opposite. I was super, super into music long, long before I ever discovered comics. So I was like, oh, my God, for real?
He was.
I think you'd be surprised, man, how many musicians are into comics, you know? I mean, it's been going on forever. Like I was telling Sal on the phone today, it's like, you know, Elvis designed the Elvis look after
the TCB. The Thunderbolts, TCB.
Yeah, and the hairdo. It was like he had sketch pads of him, you know, of like Captain Marvel Jr. Like, this is what I want to be.
That's weird that he would pick Captain Marvel Jr.
Yeah, why Jr.?
Because he was sick, goddammit.
He looked cool. I think it was Mac Rabeau's art.
Yeah.
He looked a lot cooler. And he had a cowlick.
That's true. He was a little hipper looking.
I think Captain Marvel himself looked more like Fred McMurray from My Three Sons.
I swear, we have an Elvis moment on just about every episode.
As well we should.
Yeah. I'm drinking cough syrup out of a champagne flute right now, so I'm having my Elvis moment.
Hey, you know that tape you guys got with the Rip It Out by the Root?
Yes.
I've got a ton more stuff. All from the same session and stuff. It's got to be 3 hours worth of stuff. It's insane.
I also have a lot. That isn't nearly as much as I have a lot. My girlfriend gets so pissed. She went to Nashville. She went to Memphis on a road trip last summer. So I made her and her girlfriends a mix CD of my own personalized Elvis concert that mixed songs with those interludes. And they never listened. I'll give it to you. They never listened to it. Because there's all kinds of great stuff like... him getting confused and saying like, I'm gonna do Hound Dog now, and then like, another song, or rushing through Fool's Rush In, like doing a version of that in about a minute 20.
Oh yeah, some guy is like, well, the barbiturates are like, you know, flowing down into his feet while the speed's flowing into his head, and you know, it's like his heart's pumping. And
him demanding someone to take his belt off because it's too tight. Belt's too tight, man.
That's not strange.
Have you ever done anything like that on stage, Dave? Any crazy?
God damn, my tooth hurts.
I just pissed myself. What the hell?
Space on. Man, you have no idea. I mean, the one great thing about rock and roll is that you get to do everything you always wanted to do when you were 17 years old, and you do it like well into your 30s. And I mean everything, you know. And speaking of rock, you know, one more influence really quick is that, you know, it's the Peter Parker syndrome with rock and roll. I always felt that myself. I was like, hey, you know something? This is like being, well, it's kind of a superhero that doesn't save anybody. A selfish superhero. Basically, you could be like Peter Parker, you know, during the day, you're like Peter Parker. And you, and then when you go out on stage, you're Spider-Man. The alter ego thing is huge in rock and roll, and it has a lot to do with comics.
Well, Dave, I tell you, we're gonna wrap up for the evening, but I promise we're gonna have you back again soon. So,
awesome! Thanks a lot, you guys. I really appreciate it. You know, it's awesome to be here.
Oh man, well, keep sending us topic ideas.
Keep criticizing us.
Yeah, we need them. We're running thin on ideas. So you gotta pick us up, man.
Tons of great ones.
He's gonna be the new producer.
I can sell you guys too as a package. Okay, you got your round comics and you got your chic ass hot dogs. Okay, you gotta pick them both. That's what the old newsstand guys did.
Oh, I'm so hungry. I don't like when people mention food on the show.
All right, have a good night, Dave.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Later. All right, talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Take it easy.
Bye bye. And we'd like to thank Mr. Dave Windorf for sitting in on the panel today. I think you'll be hearing Dave in future episodes. Big comic enthusiast.
Yeah, there's no question. It was just kind of neat.
Little question.
Little question that he was?
Just a little question if he is or not.
I don't think
he knows that much about comics.
When we do the creator spotlight on Jack Kirby, if he's not on that episode, he will drive from New Jersey and hit me.
Was Vince going to strangle him to get on that show?
Wow. There will be a cage match.
Well, I think Tom is good at the, like, you know, JSA 101s and stuff, but if you ever do a comics 101 about, you know, comics, just like every nook
comic?
And cranny since the dawn of sequential storytelling, Dave will probably do it.
He'll probably do it.
He knows a few things.
We like Dave. It was just neat. Like I said, when we first he first emailed us about the show because he's like, oh, you know, and he's like,
he was gentle.
Yeah, well, he had some constructive criticism about the show, but he was like, you know, very concerned because he really likes the show, and then, you know, that was before we even knew, you know, who he was or whatever, and then we found out, and that was, you know, just a whole other aspect. But I mean, he's a real comic fan. He's, you know, it's pretty obvious. So
I touched much booby during listening to his music in high school.
Well, speaking of
sweet, well, you booby, owe him for that.
Breasts, we have listener emails.
Yes, if you ever want to contact the show, we love listener emails. You can contact us at info@aroundcomics.com or any of us personally at Tom, Chris, or Sal at aroundcomics.com.
Still no Scotty.
Scotty Young Zigo. At Scotty Young at fuck off. No, Scotty Young at mac.com. You can email me there.
Oh,
ooh,
wow. And throwing it out there now.
Mailbox full.
Brave.
Here's the first listener email. Hello, guys. I've been collecting comics since the late 1970s. I've gone through several methods of tracking and inventorying my collection as it has grown. I've gone from index cards to computer programs, but I'm considering a couple of new methods and want your input. What methods do each of you use to track your collection? I'm looking at www.comicspriceguide.com as a web-based tracking system. The advantage of this access to my collection from any internet-connected computer, as well as up-to-the-minute information about his announcements. The other programs I'm looking at is Comicbase, which has a lot of search features and reporting capabilities and downloadable updates. I will certainly consider other methods if you have suggestions. Love the show. Respectfully,
mine,
Michael McVeigh.
My method is the bathroom comics or the living room comics.
Well, I'm going to give an honest answer instead of one that demeans our listeners.
Oh.
Yeah.
What do you think? Which would be?
Yeah. Well, no, I actually use comicspriceguide.com. Because for a while I wanted to get all the DC 100 pagers, and because a lot of the covers look similar. They have a good feature where you can print your like what you have on
what
there. When I'd go to a convention,
I tried using that.
As I got like about 90% of the way through it, I was always like, well, you know, it would cost about like $5 to $10 to get like a decent. I didn't just want to get one and be like, I already have it. That would be sort of
frustrating. What are you getting here? Explain this to me.
The 1970s like 100-page DC books that would have all the reprints in them. They're pretty sweet. I used to have a bunch of them when I was a kid.
I've attempted to use that program because it is cool because it's free and it does
suck in a lot of ways though.
Well,
too.
I mean, it's not perfect certainly, but I'm just too lazy. I mean, I've started it and like
you can call Scotty and tell him what you have and he'll write it down.
Yeah, with a pencil.
He'll illustrate
with a pencil so I can erase and move every. What I'll do is I'll get lined
Scotty,
notebook paper.
Scotty, do I own this?
Hold on,
let me check.
Yeah, I'll get lined notebook paper. I'll write it in pencil. That way, when you call me with a new one, I'll erase everything and move everything down a line and rewrite it.
I just alphabetize them and put them in books.
I don't
even
do that anymore. Yeah, I just throw stuff in.
Well, I'm the huge nerd.
I can't even keep my trades on the shelf near the. Like, okay, 9 Why the Last Man trades? They're nowhere fucking near each other on the shelf. I got one on one side of the room on one shelf.
That would drive me nuts.
I don't keep track of any new stuff. Like, I'm not logging in, like, the stuff I got this week. But since I buy a lot of old stuff when I see it for cheap, I will keep track of it with the Comics Price Guide.
I have their done the one thing that you talked about like, when I'm going to a con and I know I want to
fill something
in or I'm looking for something, I will use Comic Price Guide to put my list down and then bring that with me so I know, okay, I have these issues. But overall, I'm just too friggin' lazy.
Chris says it's all in his brain.
I don't know.
This is why you owe 25 copies of X-Force 1.
All right.
Why own this one?
Buy this one, Rob.
But I know I own 25 copies of
Our next email.
That was from Michael McVeigh.
I already said that.
But, hey, guys, Cameron here.
Stop it.
Hey guys, Cameron here. I'm writing to you guys to let you know how much I enjoy listening to your podcast. I started listening during the iFanboy crossover and have been hooked ever since. Your show is like a mix of iFanboy and Comic Geek Speak, which is the perfect combination for me. I'll find myself laughing out loud while walking to and from school and getting weird looks from people on the bus. Just wanted to say thank you for all the enjoyment you've given me. I almost feel guilty getting this show for free. No, wait, scratch that. I feel no guilt in retrospect.
Good, because we're going to ask you for money.
Yeah. That was from Cameron. He also said, P.S. Go to sleep.
Tell those people that give you weird looks to fuck off.
Yeah.
You love comic books and just, that you should be proud of
just
it.
Just wear all black. And
you're going to be on a iFanboy video. Is it this week? Didn't they talk to you down in at Heroes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought that had been online. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't pay attention.
Yeah, so
I'm all over the place, baby.
Thank you, Cameron, for listening, and
thanks,
we're
Cameron.
Glad that you like the show. And the one thing is, we are like a combination, a mix of those two shows, with a bunch of awesome added in.
Yeah, with the gun show, baby.
We're totally ripped. All of us are.
It's like a scene from 300 in here.
None of us are wearing shirts. We do push-ups when we're not recording.
We all getting BJs right now because it's so hot.
All right, and our last email for this episode says, "Hey guys, I have a question for Scotty.
Uh-oh.
Since he seems to be invading my life.
Oh.
First, he came to speak at my university and held a phone conference with our animation club.
What?
And then years later, he starts appearing on Around Comics and the Crankcast, both of which I started listening to around the same time.
We need to talk about that.
I've been too scared to unlock my door for about 3 weeks, so my question is this. Are you stalking me?
This podcast is being recorded in your attic. Get out of the house.
In all seriousness, though, you're an excellent addition to the show. I love when you and Tom are just bouncing jokes off each other. And your questions to other creators regarding their art processes are always interesting. Keep up the great work and keep an eye on my Chicago brothers so they don't get in too much trouble. And that's from Keith Cunningham.
Because we're just degenerates.
Thanks, Keith.
Always good to hear from Keith.
It's Edinburgh University, the animation department. They had me out to lecture them on how to become awesome.
And
I explained it to them, and I'm sure a few of them maybe started the path to becoming awesome. But no, I had a great time out there, and then a year or two later, they had me on kind of in the same capacity, but more of just a conference call with a bunch of their top students. And it was fun. So, I am stalking you. So,
put the lotion in the basket. You put the lotion on your skin or you get the hose again.
Yeah.
Did you wear a cap and gown while you were there?
No, I did. It is funny because I've done a lot of college lectures across the country and I always feel weird because I did not go to college. So I'm always like, I'm basically going to tell you that you're wasting your time.
If
you want to do what I want.
And you smoke a pipe.
Yeah.
I went to the College of Light.
Yes. I went to the College of
Any honorary degrees yet?
I keep asking people to give me an honorary degree, and they all don't do it. So I'm moving a couch in my van. I put him in a goddamn pit in my basement.
Are you
going to
be knighted at some point?
Tuck my penis between my legs and dance in front of the mirror.
Sir Scotty Young?
Yes. That would be awesome.
Sir, that would be the sweetest thing you could ever, fuck the college degree.
Yeah, I need to get knighted.
Knighted? That would be the coolest. I mean,
Sir
Scotty Young.
You know what? Right now, hey, take that beer bottle, touch me on the fucking shoulder, I'm a knight. From now on the show, it's Sir Scotty Young.
Scotty.
All right, well, in addition to contacting the show through email, you can leave us a message on our hotline.
1-888-65-GCAST. Give us a call, leave us a message, and we'll probably play it on the show unless I don't want to. But that's very rare. Also, you can join our friends of the program. Go to aroundcomics.com, and you can download and print our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show, as well as put a post to their address and whatever else on the site. Become a friend of the program today.
Frapper!
That's it.
Oh, okay. It just says Frapper to silent time. I thought we were going to yell it at the same time. Oh,
I think we have some Frappers that we'll talk about on Thursday.
Go to frapper.com/aroundcomics to
let us know where you live. We'll find you.
We'll send
we'll
Scotty
stalk you
to put you in a pit.
Yeah, to bring my white van and have you help me move my couch.
Don't join the Frapper, Keith. Don't join the Frapper.
Then I'll do some tranny shit. It'll freak you out. And thanks to everybody who left iTunes reviews. It's Ingle Lizard. This is going to be fun. Whatever, man. Let me do it. David Myers, Cammy Knoxville, Inchola, Ecola, and Jerk from Pod 6. This is Chris's favorite thing, the iTunes reviews. So keep keep
the
doing it.
The March to 200 is just
for every iTunes review, Chris gets a semi. So
well, here's the thing. It's sort of like
it takes that. Do it for Marta.
History
do it
buffs out there, it's sort of the 5-year plan that the Soviet Union always used to have, where it was like, in 5 years we'll have this much,
right.
And they just killed everyone getting that. So
they killed the rest and only left 500 alive.
Yeah, I mean,
and it was like, do it.
Look it up.
Make sure to check out AroundComics.com. It's your source for the best in comic book news, reviews, and that's not really true, and opinions. We post the next week's topic usually on Tuesdays at our forum Around Comics.
At all.
Or not. I think we should just stop saying that because I'm tired of it.
Really a bunch of liars.
Yeah. Remember, you can also visit us at comicspace.com/AroundComics and myspace.com/AroundComics.
If you're not sick of listening to people talk about comic books, you should go to the Comics Podcast Network. You will find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com, but they all don't have six-packs like we do.
And,
tonight we eat at Around Comics!
Thanks again to InStockTrades.com for sponsoring this episode. Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essential showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend. So lose your old best friend because he's kind of a dweeb.
And don't spend all your money there because we would also like you to give money to something else.
Yes.
Something that's very worthy, called the Hero Initiative. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give something back to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org. Or call 310-909-7809 and tell Santa what you want.
Yeah.
Or 7-7-3. Abs, baby.
Why do I thank everyone for joining us today?
You know how many ab rollers I've sold in my life?
Mr. Dave Windor from Monster Magnet. Look for the new record coming out
soon.
In the summer or so.
October.
Is that what he said?
Listen to the guests when they come on, guys.
Sorry.
Scotty Young, when is your next masterpiece going to hit the shelves?
I don't know.
He doesn't get to promote himself.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not trying to be funny. I don't know. I don't ever keep track because I don't.
They'll be out.
Yeah, it'll be out soon. New X-Men.
New X-Men once a month.
It's taking the place by storm anyway.
Tom, next tax return?
Yeah, it'll probably be on Monday. Scotty, you're ruining New X-Men for me.
Why, though?
There's no skateboards.
Shit, I knew I forgot something when they were in limbo.
Sal, as always,
what,
another
I don't
Friday
get to
night wasted.
I don't get to promote something?
Yeah. When is the
When's
new...
When's your next kid?
When's the...
Never. Never.
When are you having your next kid, buddy?
I'm never. It's getting clipped. It's not happening.
Smooth like a Ken doll.
Want to thank Mark, as always, for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles on the north side of Chicago. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime...
In between time...
We'll be everywhere in...
And around comics!
Mother.
Like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Yeah. Got my love and left me alone. Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, oh, let me, baby, love you one more time.